outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gene. The God Gene. The God Gene.
Okay, you ready for this?
No.
What? I ended the last one with, I got a bone to pick with you, right?
Right.
Yeah, it was something you said last time we were together.
Okay.
And no, it's not bad. Not bad for you.
Oh,
bad
okay,
for,
good.
Bad for me. No, it's not.
Feeling better already.
Yeah, I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way.
I'm Julie.
And this is The God Journey. Julie Williams. Wait, you got a last name? You gave it. You're doing
they
that,
probably know, right, by now?
You're doing that Beyonce thing,
no,
right?
No.
Yeah. I'm just Julie.
Definitely not.
I'm just Julie. No, it's just the way we it's new people. New people don't. Who's that voice? See that? It's
okay.
New people.
Okay.
We always have new people because old people don't keep listening. They stop at
some
point.
They're done.
Well, I've heard all that before.
I've heard enough of that.
Yeah. I've met someone in Oklahoma, by the way.
Okay.
Just completed all of them. What is wrong with you?
Oh, everyone?
721. Yeah, just so excited.
15 years worth of, oh, man.
Yeah, but I guess people who commute, they listen to one a day, we do one a week. So you can catch us, I guess. But I hate to think what's on some of those old ones.
Go back and look.
Firstly, the first five or six were so NPR-ish that, oh my gosh.
Although there's also some really funny moments that I remember I used to go back and listen to.
Oh, there are great funny moments.
There's some really good ones. Maybe like a reel of like all your bloopers.
I wish someone would put that podcast
together.
I've talked about it before, man. Just if somebody put that podcast together of every moment where we lost it, except the main one we lost it, we stopped the tape.
That's the one I remember.
But still the funniest one. I listen to it sometimes in an airplane. I start quaking and the seat moves and I'll go, I can't do this here.
They're all going to want to know now what one that was. You're going to have to like put it in the notes somewhere.
If I remember to do that, I'll put it in the
podcast
notes. It's about Brad saying pissed off and it was way beyond my ability to handle. And my mom was still alive and just knew that could go really, really bad for me. But here's where you ruined me. You messed me up. Because last time we got done and we've been doing this a little over a year. And so I was asking you whether, you know, you like doing it. Would you continue doing it? Do you feel like how we first started was you felt like God wanted to give you some voice or God wanted to use your voice? Mm-hmm. Or I don't know what you exactly said. Use, I don't use with God anymore, but God wanted to give you voice.
Yeah.
Whatever. That ticks people off in Oklahoma too. That whole God use me stuff.
Oh, they don't like that.
They don't like not using it.
They like you. Yes.
They like God using.
No, everybody likes to. I hear it on all the podcasts I listen to. God's using you.
Does it freak you?
It makes me stop and go, ooh, that does sound kind of icky. But I get what they're saying.
I get what they're saying too.
Yes, but it's hard to get around. And what's another word that you use to kind of
That God wants to work with us. God wants to involve us in what he's doing. And God wants to use us is just weird. It's religious language, I think. But I understand what they mean too. And I can be. Anyway, so you were saying, so I was asking you, you know, we've known a year, what do you think about it? And do you remember what you said?
Oh, no, I don't remember now.
Because I can't quote you and I'm trying to remember exactly what you said, but you said something. Because I said if you enjoyed doing it, join a podcast, whatever, the voice. And you said something about, well, I never thought I had anything people wanted to hear. I had anything to say people wanted to hear.
Yeah.
Something like that. Do you remember
that? And we were at lunch after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just went,
did look at me very weird at that moment. And then the conversation, we were with Mom.
And Mom took it over. As she
went another direction.
We love you, Sarah. Love you a ton. But yeah. Yeah, every time I ask the kids, I noticed that dinner last night. We had dinner with you and Amy yesterday. And I asked something of Amy, and you two were talking. Next thing I know, Sarah's over here throwing questions at Amy. I didn't finish my theme of thought here. Give me a break.
Oh.
She's so curious, endlessly curious,
she
that
is.
Woman. So anyway, how it messed me up is I just, and the pride look on my face was, I've never had that thought in my entire life. I've never had the thought, do I have something worth saying that people want to hear? And I think, and maybe that's a bit strange on my end.
That you,
that
you
I never
just stop and go, shoot.
I remember being very young and I'm writing essays and I listen to other kids' essays being read in class going, that's wrong. That's not right.
Yeah.
And I always felt like I had good stuff to say. And now I'm really wondering if I wasn't wired well. You know?
Yeah, I do. I'm obviously wired very differently because I feel that way.
But I don't know how you get to be a writer or anything else if you didn't feel like you had something to say that would add something to the world that other people were missing. And I felt really arrogant for the rest of the day. I mean, I know I have stuff to say that touch people. I know that. Yeah. So, because I've been doing it for years, but I thought there was something strange about me that I ever thought about, huh? Because maybe it was more, I was wanting to be a writer more than like I thought I had something to say to the world. But very early on, even in pastoral ministry and stuff, I felt I was learning things that no one else seemed to be learning. So, of course, you want to communicate that.
Right.
You don't have any of that? That just drives me crazy.
I don't. I drive over to do a podcast every time and sit there and go, what am I doing? I don't have anything to say.
But you do.
You're
just unaware of it. But it's not bad self-image because you're not a bad self-image person.
And I'm not like I don't have confidence or whatever, but I think I just.
But you blogged for a while, so you obviously thought you had ideas to share with
other parents. And I struggled with that. And I think
I did.
And I was doing a lot of photo blogging, so it wasn't necessarily like the writing part. But then people would tell me, oh my gosh, I love it when you write. And I was like, oh, well, thank you. But I don't know. Like, I write for myself all the time. I love writing. But I could never imagine that I would write something that other people would actually want to read. I don't know. It's just the way that I'm wired, I guess. I don't know.
It's weird. It's weird because most of the people I meet are dying to say something. Most people are frustrated. They don't have the audience that wants to listen to what they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not that way. Mm-hmm. But you're also not one of these, you know, feel inferior kind of people who, I have nothing to say, nothing to add to the world. Because that's not how you live your life. And your friends obviously love the ideas that you have with your kids. I'm thrilled to have you come. Every day you come over here to do a podcast makes my heart so happy.
Aww.
It is, because I tell people I get to talk with my daughter in a way that we wouldn't normally talk.
Right.
We normally trade ideas and think through this kind of thing. But I hope other parents do it. I hope they sit down with their kids and go, hey, what did we do well in raising you? And what did you wish we had done differently? Or, I mean, we've had some of that kind of talk. And I go away learning something every time I'm with you. So I really value it. I love it. I was surprised that you didn't see value in it. Struggle with when you come over today.
I enjoy it. I enjoy sitting here and doing this once I get going. But it's not like I don't look forward to it. And I love, you know, I have friends that love, I have friends that will text me and say, can we meet this week? I need to pick your brain for like an hour. And I'm like, okay, like, sure. And if people ask me questions, that's where I thrive. Like, then I feel like, okay, they want to know what I have to say about X, Y, Z. And I have lots of friends in my life that I do that with. So that was part of, I think, what God was kind of working on in me was that you do have value. Your voice has value. And I do see that now, and I see it with my friendships, and there's something that has shifted in me, but it's still coming on a podcast. Like, who's listening? Why do they care what I have to say? You know, like, I still have that mentality. It's still something that I have to, like, I feel like God reminds me of, you have value. Voice has value.
Well, you already know you have value, though.
Yeah, but
just
about
in a podcast.
In a podcast, kinda, in like sharing how I feel on XYZ subject, I don't always, like, why am I the expert? Like, I don't know. Like, I'm in the middle of raising kids. I don't know what I'm doing. I do my best. So far, they're okay. I haven't killed anybody yet, so we'll keep going.
As one pediatrician said, they're pretty hard to kill.
They are pretty hard to kill.
You have to actually try to do that.
Yeah.
But they don't die by accident, or they don't die just from a bad parenting moment.
Yeah. And I think I didn't realize how much I struggled with that until recently. I got mixed up in this Enneagram stuff, and kind of what I learned about myself through this process was
we don't promote that Enneagram.
I know.
Stuff. No, I'm kidding.
I got
people in Oklahoma that love it.
I'm sure. Yeah, people love it, hate it, whatever. For me, it gave words to things that I have felt, but I didn't know how to convey it.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like I've learned so much about myself. I mean, I think the Enneagram is a tool. I don't think that it is let's figure out who you are, like, to put you in a box. Like,
right.
I think it helps me get out of my box of feeling like my voice doesn't matter. I think the Enneagram has helped get me out of that. And it has helped give me more freedom in using my voice when the time is there. So.
Yeah, and this wasn't really meant to be about you.
No.
But I like that we're on that.
Yeah.
Because do you feel like, you say you feel like that's working, that God's really showing you that you do have some valuable things to contribute
Yeah, like there's, I think over the past year specifically, I've had more friends in the past year say, I need to pick your brain. I just, can we get together like an hour? Like, do you have time? Can we talk on the phone? And before, I don't know that I would, I never had that before. I think there is some new confidence, something that God's kind of stirred in me that there, I can help people with ideas or whatever it is, talking through things. I'm really good at talking through things. I can say that. I'm good at listening. I'm good at asking questions. And I think that that is, are things that God has shown me that I am good at.
Yeah. Well, you're a good problem solver and you definitely have neat insights about stuff. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of wisdom in your life and your journey with God. I tell people at your age right now, I was still not on the journey I've been on the last 25 years. I was still deeply embedded in religion, going through some real betrayal kinds of issues and some real frustration with God kinds of issues, that God's not being the God I thought he should be. And really thinking, you know, some real disillusionment with church, that church should be better than it is, but didn't know why after working my own system for 15 years, it wasn't better than it was. Mm-hmm. And so I'm asked to look at what I was doing and the journey you've been on for the last 20 years or so, 25. Yeah. It's extraordinary. And I tell people that. I just say, I love where my daughter lives her life, because you came up a few times in Oklahoma. Always people going, I love when Julie's on the podcast with you. And I got people say, I love when Kyle's on the podcast. Yeah. You know, I've got people who love, I love it. Where's Brad? Well, Brad had surgery recently, so I don't know where Brad is. Yeah. We'll find Brad maybe sometime down the road. But people love it when you're on here. They love the things you add. They love a woman's voice, a mother's voice. They love that. And they love the whole father-daughter dynamic, because I don't know when you're going to come at me with something. I'll have to deal
with. Or the other way around. That's how this whole thing got started today.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, because from this standpoint of you learning that you have a voice that's valuable for people, I think that's awesome. Because I don't know how God will get to be part of that with you. But I've gone really back to why in my early days did I never have a second thought that I had better stuff to say than things I was reading or even listening to on TV. I watched a lot of talk shows. And I'd go, no, that's not... I didn't realize at the time, here's where I was stupid, naive, and I still am. I still am naive on this level. There's a game being played if you want to make it in those industries. There's a real game being played. It's not... People are not trying to get the right ideas. Like, I'd watch one political commentary show, and they always had the worst Christians on it. They always had the right-wing nut jobs.
Yeah.
And the other people they had on the left were a little more reasoned. They weren't the nut jobs. They didn't get the nut jobs left. They got right. And I was saying, and I'd write them letters saying, why don't you have somebody on there that can do this, this, and this, and this? And then you come to realize they don't want to. That's part of the shtick. We want the nut job on here we can make fun of, not have a real reasoned discussion.
Yeah.
There's a thing you work in the publishing trade that, you know, I had somebody try to recruit me to be a writer for them a year or two ago, and I had some new books coming down the pike. And so I thought, well, I mean, this could make it easy. And then when you get with them, he actually handed me, I said, what do you want me to write exactly? And he handed me a book cover, a whole book proposal. I mean, anything a writer would kill for.
Oh, gosh.
But I read the cover, and lovely cover. I loved it. Looked on the back copy, and I go, I've already written this book. He goes, what? This is He Loves Me. Yeah, that's your best book. Well, I agree it's my best book, but I've written that book. Oh, you want to write it again?
Write it again.
People will
buy it because, it's you, and it was good the first time.
And I know they will.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like I couldn't do that book, and it would sell well.
Yeah.
And, but I won't be that guy.
Yeah.
I get, and it just, it's me. When I read Brennan Manning, for instance, Abba's Child, one of my top books ever. Abba's Child, Daddy Abba. I loved it. And so I read more of his stuff. And then you realize I'm reading the same book over and over again. This is the former priest going off the wagon, finding God's grace, which is a great story. I love Brennan Manning's story. But I'm not that guy that needs to read that story every year under a new book thing, you know? And I had some guy this week call me and try and recruit me. He probably should have called me when I wasn't so tired, because I even joked about it. I don't have the power to edit you out or edit me. I'm just, you're getting the raw Wayne here. And you may want to record this. This could be valuable someday. But he was trying to get me on a speaking circuit of some convention circuit. And you got to do this step and here you got to do this and this and this. And I'm going, yeah, no, I don't think that's me. And he was actually trying to help me. He's not part of that, in the sense that he's recruiting speakers for it, but he was thinking that would bless me. And I'm going, he said, what? I said, yeah, I'm not. He said, but if you do this, this, and this, eventually be the keynote, blah, blah. I said, yeah, but still, I'd go for a weekend conference, and I have one 75-minute session, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm staying around the hotel with the other speakers. I'm not with real people. I'm not in a conversation. I'm just presenting from a stage, and I'm not that guy. I just came back from Oklahoma, man. Tired as I was coming out of Enid and sitting there all day in Norman talking to a group of people that were going through some, I mean, they didn't know a lot about me. This is not people who are well-read, and these are people who a friend said, hey, why don't you come over and interact with this guy? And a lot of them kind of came over with, yeah, I'll see. And then, oh my gosh, they were into it. And then like, you coming back? And I'm going, because we only had a day. And I know a day is frustrating. A day. Yeah. And we had like 6 hours of dialogue, 7 hours in one day. And that's just scratching the surface. So when I think about 75-minute speaking thing from a stage.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm not that guy. Because I always say starting out, I'm not an expert. I don't think this podcast has been an expert. This is the favorite tagline I think we had for this was two real guys talking about life, or a father and a daughter talking about
real
life, or Wayne and Kyle talking about life, or Wayne and Tracy talking about sex or whatever. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just real. It gives a chance for people to interact and think beneath the religious culture that I don't think has very good answers for life. I don't. I think the plastic answers work 80% of the time, but they don't work when life really turns on you. Mm-hmm. And that's where people need to know God.
Yeah.
So I've really been, it's really, I've thought about this a lot. Like, who am I? Why am I talking? Why am I going? Why are they asking me questions? But I love what you said about that. When people, and maybe this is where teaching was meant to begin. I guess that from what you said a few minutes ago about people are asking you, and then you feel like I'm valuable in that context, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't mean everybody takes what you say all the time, but you're interacting with their ideas, and that triggers new thoughts for them. And somehow out of that, people feel helped.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that isn't where teaching really begins in the body of Christ. Mm. What I just said about the formula thing, whether it's writing or speakish, or have a blog, have a podcast, have a, you know, and try and get a book out there and try and get known and try and do, that's the whole. The pastorpreneurs that were planting churches years ago are now the podcasterpreneurs. When we started this podcast, there were like 10 podcasts in the whole world.
Yeah.
And now I've noticed
there's
that
the
major corporation, now it's become a celebrity thing. Mm-hmm. It used to be the guys who just couldn't get on the radio did this.
Did
now
podcasts.
The guys on the radio also have a podcast.
Yeah.
Because they don't have enough time and bandwidth to eat up for everybody else. Mm-hmm. But I was talking to a guy this week who's really struggling, feels like he has the gift of teaching. And you can tell because when you're around him, he's teaching. Mm-hmm. But it's very artificially kind of quoting a lot of scripture. It's like a little sermon. And sometimes they're not so little. But, it's that.
Yeah.
And it turns people off. There's such an agenda to it.
Yeah.
And he wrote me this week and said, I want to be a teacher and maybe I need it for self-validation or whatever. And I'm going, yeah, see,
that's the problem.
That is the problem. And he's a young guy and he's probably got lots to say and he's probably got better stuff to say than people who have bigger microphones. So but I wonder if the way organically we move into a gift of teaching, again, not the top-down lectured crud, but a friend alongside helping ask questions, give wisdom, make insights that open people's life, that happens better, not by me taking the stage and saying, thus saith the Lord.
Right. Yeah.
But in people coming to me saying, I love the way you live your life.
Yeah.
And could you help me with this? I want to think this through with you.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I love that. I mean, you kind of do that. Like you travel around, you don't travel around to speak. You travel around to talk in people's homes and talk to groups of people and groups of people and have conversations. And that's me. I'm never going to, I'm more comfortable with a table of four people than I am in a room of 20. Like it kind of freaks me out. Like I'm a little bit introverted. I'm a little bit that's not quite comfortable for me.
I think like, compared to your mom, you're not introverted at all.
Well, compared to mom.
You're not even close to what.
Right. But introverted meaning like that's how I recoup. Like that's how I is by myself. Like I need that time alone. And I like being with people, but I want a small group. I want a small intimate group. That's where I feel like I have the best conversations and where I feel most comfortable.
I think that's always true, but you also do big rooms well.
Oh, I'm not comfortable in big rooms.
I mean managing lots of
relationships. I can be nice to people, but yeah. I mean,
Sarah does. People say, why doesn't Sarah travel with you? And I go, you know what? One day in Enid, 7 in the morning, starting with breakfast, ending at 10 o'clock at night in a conversation around someone's family room.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's out for 2 weeks. My wife just like, just exhausted, never wants to. So I can't take Sarah with me unless I do one day events.
Yeah.
Because it just wears her out.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I've never seen that like I see it now. So I'm really willing to let Sarah be Sarah and mm-hmm. she gets to go when she wants, but that'll be more of a, we're in a conversation with people rather than Wayne's doing a lot of answering questions for people.
But even like a big group of room, like a big room full of people, I'm like, where do I go? Who do I, how do I, like I, you know, Tyler and my husband wants a big room full of people. So it's always hard for him. He's like, let's invite all of our friends and go do. And I'm like, oh, how about we invite just this, our couple of friends that we're really close with and let's go hang out. So that's definitely always a thing. But I like love sitting around having conversations with people and you know, talking about the hard stuff. I'm not afraid to talk about the hard stuff. And I'm not afraid to ask the hard questions, I think. And my friends, as much as like I never used to do that because I didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings, I don't mind asking those hard questions and having like if they're struggling with something, I'm the helper, like I want to help. So,
and I think a question oftentimes is far more powerful than telling people what to do. A question that opens them up to a different reality they never thought of before.
Absolutely.
It's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
You could see the gears working in their head.
Yeah.
Just by sometimes making a little observation.
Even just saying like, you know, how do you feel about that? What are you going to do about that? Like I use those with my kids, but I've used those with my friends. Like, well, how did that make you feel? Like, what are you going to do? And it gets people thinking. And I just, I don't know. I hope that it's helpful to people. And I always say with the podcast, like, as long as it's helpful, I'm happy to hang around here. But I'd be great if there was like 2 more people and a bigger conversation, I think, than I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I don't always have a whole lot to contribute, but I do.
You need a little of Arnita's training on scanning a room.
Yeah, right?
She does this so well.
I've heard about that.
I had her talk about in Edmund where you walk into a room. And first of all, she never walks into and by room, it's not I'm going over to visit friends. But you walk into a room where there's 40, 50, 60 people in a room, mm-hmm. like a party or something like that. She does this thing where she pauses a moment and scans the room. And what do I want this night to be about? Most of us just kind of wade into the room and like, who talks to me first or what conversation can I get involved in? And I don't want to be the awkward wallflower.
Yeah,
I don't want to be by myself.
That's
And that for me, I tell you, I learned because I watch how Arnita does this, but there are rooms I go in because everybody knows each other and I'm like the speaker guy or whatever. But then afterwards where people all get talking to each other. And then there's that awkward moment of I'm not in any one of the conversations that are going on here. And I used to just kind of merge into one because I didn't want to be that wallflower mm-hmm. kind of guy. But my best conversations is when I stop and just be the wallflower guy and somebody who really wants to talk to me, who wouldn't do it in a group, will come over. And it may take 3 or 4 minutes. So I feel really awkward. So I'm like, hey, nobody in this room wants to talk to me.
Yeah.
And I think about that thing. Nobody does. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But then somebody does. And so willing to take that moment of, okay, I'll look awkward for a minute because mm-hmm. that may open a door. But to scan a room, and she says right now, this year, this was interesting. I didn't do this in Edmond. She said, I don't have enough Hispanic people in my life.
Hmm.
So when I go into a room right now, I'm scanning, where are the Hispanic people in this room that I don't know? And and she said, oh, this is one thing she does. Always when you go into a room, meet 3 new people you've never met before.
Hmm.
Just make, and so you do that. You just go over and be near them. Just be proximate to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that approximation oftentimes opens a door. And then she has a question, like she's an open-ended question, not how's the weather, sports,
yes,
or where are you from, or what do you do for your job, but just something like, what did you do today you really enjoyed? Mm. Or just something like that that gets people talking. And she has a whole thing on this, part of her leadership training development. And if you haven't heard it, man, you need to you need to go to Arnita event.
She's so great.
It changes the way I walk into a room.
Interesting, yeah.
It does, because now I'm, okay, why am I here? Not, I'm here to survive the night and not embarrass myself. That's not a plan.
Right.
But three new people to meet. Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
I always have so many people to I want to catch up with mm-hmm. that I don't think about three new people to start a relationship with. And then be near them and then ask an open-ended question that doesn't have an agenda to it. Because if you ask, you know, where they go to church or what they do for a job or or where they're from, it all makes that look awkward.
Yes.
But there's better questions.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
absolutely.
What excites you about your life right now? Yeah. Or, yeah, just that kind of thing. Anyway,
that's
good training.
Interesting.
But I like the idea of those that are, because right now what we do is if you want to be a teacher and you go to Bible school or university, you get a degree, then you get a job, and then you get a youth director job, and then you get to teach youth, so you can try out your skill, and then you get maybe a pastor job or associate pastor, and you sub in for the big guy when the big guy can't be there, and then eventually you become your own big guy, and then you do. And I just think, wow, that's probably just completely backwards, because we get guys who can work the formula well, just right. like writing or whatever, but then the continued moral failures, betrayals, what, I mean, even some of the huge guys from my generation now, the Me Too movement has caught up to them, and the inappropriateness with women and things that were said and done and actual flirting and actually trying to get something going with somebody and in case having affairs. Man, it's just so, because teaching was a job. It wasn't the quality of the life you lived invited other people into you, other people invite you into their world, and then that helps them. So they're saying, hey, I've got a friend to talk to, which is exactly, as I say all that, how Bridge Builder started.
Mm.
I didn't train to be a mediator. None of this language of healing stuff, common ground.
Mm.
I was a parent. You went to kindergarten. And God told Sarah and I to go with you, which meant go volunteer, which may not always been a blessing, but we're always around. That got me in a conversation in the site council about a conflict at the school. That got me invited to another school to help them with a similar conflict. That got the eye of the district office. They wanted me to help on a committee to do some other stuff. And that they were exporting me to other. And the whole Bridge Builders things grew, not out of Wayne hanging up a shingle. I'm going to be a bridge builder and I'm going to start this new career. It happened because the quality, whatever there was, of my life and my ability to see a common ground others couldn't mm-hmm. see became valuable to people.
Right.
Could this be a way it would work? I mean, I don't see it working this way. I
no.
see hanging out a shingle, more people trying to be an expert than there's room for experts
to be. Well,
you've got
to have an occupation, a job. So I want to be this. So I'm going to go to school and I'm going to jump through these hoops to get there, as opposed to someone who may bring that kind of value into it already.
And so now we're just, and maybe that's why we always default to commitment being the point of involvement with a local congregation, because speaker guy, I've heard a million times, or he's not that good, but we're committed to this because that's what we agreed to be committed to. And it's just, I'm rethinking so much of what it means to be the God kind of teacher in the world. Dave Coleman came into my life. He was a former pastor, but he was a wallpaper hanger.
Mm-hmm.
But being in conversations with him, inviting him to teach a marriage class with me, because stuff he'd said about marriage, I'm thinking, man, I think some other people. And then just seeing the quality of his life and the number of people that come to Dave and Donna Coleman to say, help me with something going on in my life, and became that for Sarah and me.
Right.
That's the valuable thing when Jesus is talking about, if you receive a righteous man in the name of a righteous man, a prophet in the name of a prophet, it's really about me seeing it. It's not about you telling me I'm that and you need to listen to me, mm-hmm. which is maybe that's why you feel awkward about the podcast thing.
Maybe.
Because I know one of those things growing up, the fields are white unto harvest. Pray God raise up laborers. And when you do this more religiously, there's too many competitors out there for writing space, if you want to be a writer, for podcasting space now, if you want to be a podcaster, for pastor. There's more people want those positions and are positioned to get it. A lot of them have what do they call those things now? Shoot, I forgot the term. But somebody that pays your way, somebody, some rich friend that buys them buildings and pays their way in media. And I was just with some folks in... I won't say now. Who actually, I'm going to be careful on this one, because they actually do media to take unknown people and make them famous Christian speakers. And when you hear the stories of how that person was made into an international speaker by the money they spent to get the publicity they needed, to get the contacts they needed to build a ministry, all for the glory of the kingdom, of course.
Right. But it's the made them into.
Yeah.
That is icky.
It is really icky. And the life turns out to be that icky. Mm-hmm. It's not like, oh, that brings the cream to the top, because it doesn't. It brings the ambitious to the top.
Right.
And I was one of those ambitious guys. I was, you've probably heard this before, but maybe not everybody has. One of the scriptures that God's most confronted me with through other people in my life is the parable of the wedding feast when Jesus takes them in. He says, hey, when you go to the wedding feast, don't go up and sit down at the front of the head table. And the people have to, hey, move off of that. Sit in the back, sit in the last place. And when the master of the banquet sees you there, he'll come to you and say, hey, come and join me at my table. That there's something about self-promotion in ministry, and I get why people do it. If you want to make your living, you know, people look at doing what I do, or, you know, having a podcast, having books out, then you've got to promote yourself. You've got to stand on the stage. You've got to play all the games that get you noticed. Or maybe you don't. Or maybe you just say, Jesus, if you have something valuable in me, let it spill out.
Yeah.
And then watch. Because that's this one younger guy wrote me this week. I've been trying so hard to be a teacher and to be validated. And I think I just mucks up the water. And I think what he's got a heart for, could he probably be that guy on the stage and work that system? He probably could be.
Right.
But there's something real enough in him that's trying to find a real way into this. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this will help or not, but I think if you just live your life openly and generously, watch how other people invite your voice into places where it becomes valuable. Now you're going to watch all the convention stuff go by and say, gosh, that guy's made, you know, flies around his private jet because he can't handle a tube full of demons and all that stuff that goes on. We could talk about that in my Oklahoma trip too, about, yeah, I'm getting on that tube full of demons tomorrow and flying. Oh, two of them, in fact. And my spiritual life will not be hindered one bit from being in a tube full of demons all day. Might get coronavirus, but other than that, I'm on it. And I just the idea that when people recognize the gift of God in you, they will come and get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to force it on, which I'm not telling people, if you got a book on your heart, don't write a book. I'm not saying any of that. Or if you got a podcast, whatever. But the organic growth of the wisdom in your life is better than my need to convince people that I'm a teacher, or my need to convince people I'm a good writer.
Right.
My motivation
behind it. Like, my motivation isn't to get my voice out there. I just want to love the people that God puts in my life. I want to love them. I want to support them. I want to help them any way that I can. I don't have any other motivation.
Which makes you a compelling podcast guest. Or co-host or whatever. I'm not sure what we're doing these days. But I love the humility of that. That's what kind of stopped me up short when we were having lunch. I'm thinking, you know, I've never thought about that. I've never once in my life doubted that I not only, and the ego of youth was, I've got the best stuff to say. At 25, wow. I'm going to go plant a new, 27, I planted a new church. And this was going to be what the world was looking for. I had all the answers at 27.
Wow.
And I didn't even know the questions, the right questions to be asking until I was in my 40s. So I just go, wow, what a journey this has been. This has been such, I'm not doing, I say this all the time, I'm not doing anything today I expected to be doing when I was this age. But everything I'm doing is far greater than anything I dreamed of doing. The way God has allowed my life to unfold. And even when I'm hearing about, okay, there's the convention thing, there's something in my heart that yanks at, oh yeah, being the speaker for that group and going and doing this. And those guys have a name and they're looked at from a distance. And then when I think about trading that for sitting at a table for lunch in Enid, Oklahoma with about 15 people who were engaged in really sorting out some of the issues from their past and some of the ways God might be inviting into a better future. And I just go, there's not even a comparison for me there.
Yeah.
But the other thing offers you income stream, fame, validation. Yeah. It offers you
more than
what the ambitious desires.
Yeah.
And when I see scriptures on selfish ambition, that was your dad years ago. I hope it's not as much there now, but that was growing up. That was in my 20s and 30s, early 40s, incredibly ambitious and frustrated God wasn't serving my desire to have an audience.
There's
that moment in the Jake Colson book that I don't, so you don't want to go to church anymore, where he says, gosh, I have better things to say now and less people to say it to. That was right out of one of my complaints to God, just going, man, I've learned about the cross, learned this, and I don't have a congregation on Sunday morning. I don't have big crowds begging me to right. teach this stuff.
But he opened up so many doors for you to.
So many better doors.
Yeah. To get out that message, you know, like just an organic wait on him. I'm just going to see what you put in front of me next. And I think that's just so much more valuable.
That's what I want to tell people who really have aspirations for ministry. Just love who's in front of you and yeah. watch what God unfolds rather than your five-year plan, getting your sugar daddy, that's the word I was looking for earlier, the sugar daddy to pay okay. your bills yeah. while you have your little ministry dream. And I know that's not totally horrible because I know God has done good things through
of
that.
Course,
so I'm not
absolutely.
Totally dissing on that because people mm-hmm. see a gift in life and say, hey, I want to support that as mm-hmm. their gift to the world. We're doing that with a young man now, just to work with gang kids, just because we love what he's doing to be available to gang kids. So Sarah and I are helping free him
yeah.
from some of his time to work so he could go be with those kids, just because those kids need a guy like him. And no one, this is Dave Wilkerson on day three of reaching out to gang kids in New York, or mm-hmm. Father Gregory Boyle on day yeah. seven. This is just a guy in my community who has a connection to gang kids and yeah. needs some time to be with them.
And is willing to love them.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And just spend time. And what's fun to talk to him about it is he's not like, oh, God has called me to this.
Yeah.
Said, I love this kid. These kids are so funny. Yeah. I love them. Or
back to the motivation. Like the motivation is just to love them. That's all it is. It's not to make a name for himself or to be that guy. It's just to love these kids.
Yeah. Or he's broken for them. Like one of yeah. the kids, he bought him some new clothes. Some money that Sarah and I gave. He bought new clothes for this kid. Kid had just dirty, torn, worn out, worthless clothes. So he bought him some clothes. He came back the next day. And he was in tears. And he said, what happened? His mom, a drug addict, took all his clothes and sold them.
Wow. Can't imagine.
Can you imagine a mom like that?
No,
can you
I
imagine
cannot.
A kid growing up with a mom like that? And that's what he sees. So he's like, okay, we'll get you some more clothes. We'll keep them at my house. You can come over here and change your clothes. So mom can't sell them. But man, loving kids who have to navigate that level of society. Now, mm-hmm. and that maybe that's what Proverbs means when it says, your gift will make room for you. Rather than you making room for your gift. And I think that's how we've always done it, you know.
Yeah.
I want to be this so bad. And you can see it. I look back at some of the stuff I did and go, man, what must have bled with selfish ambition that I was totally unaware of, but people around me would roll their eyes. Maybe that's why that one guy told me, first church I was at, he said, you know, I love you with the love of the Lord, but mostly you disgust me. I was like,
oh,
how is this helpful?
Yeah.
You
yikes.
Love me with the love of, oh, but I really don't like you. That's what he said.
Oh.
And I went,
that doesn't feel so good.
And I said, thank you. I think today I would say, well, back up a minute.
What do you mean by that?
What do you mean love of the Lord if you don't like me?
Yeah.
I don't see those two as being separate things, but I do think about that when I sing, however I sing, I love you with the love of the Lord. I feel, this feels like it's just, I'm pretending to love you because Jesus wants me to. But I don't like you much at all.
Oh.
Hey, thanks for staying on. That's two podcasts, and we still didn't get to the next chapter of this book.
I know.
Eventually,
wow,
we're not going to need this book. That was my hope. The next chapter or two are pretty weird anyway, but we'll...
A little odd.
We'll take a look at them, because it'd be fun to talk about. But you all prepped and everything, and we didn't even get to use it.
We didn't even. It's all good.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.